Hey, welcome. You got a little something in the corner of your mouth? Yeah. No, right over. No, it's a little bit higher. Right. Yeah. No. Over more. Right there. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's still there. Right? Oh, gosh.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Now it's on your cheek. It's right over there on your
cheek. Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Oh, God. Allergies. Oh, my God, these allergies are driving me crazy. Oh, man. Oh, my goodness. It's middle of the summer and I still have allergies. Who invented these allergies? Who's responsible for this? I know it's one of you. Man. Gosh. My nose is so stuffed. I could hardly breathe through my nose at all. Oh, man. Let me just blow it, baby. Hold on. We're friends enough that I can do this on. I don't have to stop this, do I, in order to blow my nose? Are we okay with this? Hold on. We're friends, right? No? Probably not. Oh, that's pretty. That's a pretty little sight. Oh, man. You don't want to see that. Thank God this is radio. You don't want to see that. Oh, man. Okay, thanks for being so understanding. Probably not understanding at all. You probably got the same problem. I don't complain when you blow your nose, do I? Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. I am Ron Van Dam. There are no moving parts to this program whatsoever. This entire thing is all digital. There are no moving parts at all, which is phenomenal. It really is. Well, I'm still trying to understand the world around me. But I falter, and I desperately try to understand things. I was watching the Democratic National Convention. Very effective if you're a Democrat. If you're a Republican, you're probably not even watching a damn thing. These conventions, I think a lot of people watch them, but I think it's like speaking to the choir, preaching to the choir, I think is the proper terminology. I don't think it really goes much further than that. Although I guess, see, this is a horrible election, and I think I'm even getting a little anxiety from this. Those of us in the media who cover this thing every day and have to be aware of what everybody says at every single time, it's pretty agonizing when you know, just because you're in the media doesn't mean that you're not sensitive to the fact that this all sucks big time. This is bad. This is where you have both presidential candidates. The highest rating of unfavorability of any candidate ever, when both of them are horrible, and they're both untrustworthy. I think I know who's more untrustworthy than the other. If you consider both to be equally as untrustworthy, then that means that cancels out the category of untrustworthy. In other words, you can't use that category anymore because it's a tie of crap. So then you have to start looking at other things such as experience, the actual ability to do this thing properly. And then Clinton obviously wins. If you remove this untrustworthy tie of crap, it's true. They're both untrustworthy. I don't believe a damn thing Donald Trump says. That's a given. And I don't believe a damn thing Hillary Clinton says. That's a given. I think Hillary's got more of it in her heart. And I think Donald Trump needs a bypass of understanding here. I think Trump has nothing in his heart whatsoever except for dollar bills. Hillary's not too far away from the dollar bill thing in her heart either, to be honest with you, though. Although I got to tell you, man, in both their situations, if I were a businessman like Donald Trump, I don't think I could do everything above board and honestly and make a dime. And if I were Hillary Clinton and I wanted to do my life in politics and helping people and getting to the top, like the presidency, in order to do that, I don't think you could get there by being totally honest. I just don't think you can. I don't think we're set up that way. So both of them suck big time in that untrustworthy category. They're both untrustworthy. I long for one of them to step up to the plate. That's a baseball analogy, ladies and gentlemen, not a food analogy. And I would like one of them, if not both of them, to say, all right, I'm going to be honest with you. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I'm going to own up to them right now. I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect. And I just want to tell you that, man. I've learned there's no reason to hide stuff anymore. If you understand that, then we can go that route. As long as you're not going to knock me down for making mistakes here and there, then I will be honest with you. I think that would be very effective. Do you think that would work? If Hillary Clinton came out and said, I'm going to be honest with you, I've made some huge mistakes, and I learned from them, and I never want to make those mistakes again. Donald Trump couldn't ever say that because it's not part of his personality. But if he did, would that make a difference? I think in both their cases, it's almost too late. But it would make a difference, I believe. Do you think it would make a difference? If one of them or both of them fessed up, would that make a difference to you? Think about that. President Obama last night in his speech said something that was that hit home. He's very good. Even if you hate the guy and you hate his policies, he's a very good orator. He really is. He knows how to deliver. I mean, even if you don't like the product, he knows how to deliver it. I mean, you order a pizza, and it's the worst pizza you ever ate, and it's all greasy and horrible, and it smells rotten. But the guy who delivered the pizza brought it in a beautiful truck, and it was nice and warm, and delivered it nicely. That's what Obama is. I happen to like the pizza as well, but he's... his delivery truck and his on-time delivery is pretty cool. He said, nobody understands what it's like to sit in the White House behind that desk and handle world crisis. And no one understands until you sit behind that desk. You can do all the talking and all the rhetoric you want until you sit behind that desk. You have no idea what you're up against until you get there. And between the two, Trump and Clinton, Clinton has been in that room with the desk. Trump, I don't even think they'll let him in the building. That's what I'm looking at right now. Because I do believe that. I don't think Trump has any idea what it's like to sit behind that desk. He can fantasize and say what he thinks he's going to do and what it's like to sit. I don't think he has a clue what it's about to sit behind that desk, and I think Clinton does have a clue about it. And that's what I think makes the difference. And I thought that was a very telling thing. And then Obama continued to say, and for this, I take my pants off to him. It's not enough to take my hat off. I'm taking off the pants too. Obama said, I've made many mistakes, many of them huge. But when you try really hard, when your job is to try everything, then you're going to make mistakes. If you don't make mistakes, it means you didn't try. And that human element that we all make mistakes, my God, have you made some major mistakes in your life? Of course you have. Do you admit them to people? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But you know you've made major mistakes. And why do you know that? Two reasons. One, because you're human. If you try things, you're going to fall sometimes. If you don't try them, you may not fall. But in a job like presidency, you have to try, and you're going to fall sometimes. He was human. He said, I'm human. I make mistakes. Why can't Clinton say that? I think it would make a difference. And that's one of my frustrations, because I'm an American, and I'm going to vote for somebody. I'm not going to be one of these little pick-ass people, I'm sorry if you're one of them, who say, I don't like either candidate, I'm not going to be voting this time around, I can't do it. That's pick-ass crap. That's the one thing they ask you to do in this country besides pay your property tax and your sales tax and stuff and your income tax. They ask you to vote. It's the one thing you can do. It's not even mandatory. But don't sit it out. Anyway, it's a problem. It's a problem. Please, some candidate, say, let me hear the words come out of your mouth. I've made mistakes in my life. I made a mistake. That thing you're talking about, I didn't handle it the best way I could have. That was a mistake on my part. I own it. But I'll never do that again. I've learned the more mistakes I make, the more I understand that I must seek not to make them. But I'm like you, I'm human. Please let me hear that from somebody. Let me hear it from my spouse. Let me hear it from my boyfriend. Let me hear it from my girlfriend. Let me hear it from my boss. Let me hear it from somebody. I don't think you're incompetent if you've made a mistake. I really don't. I don't think you can climb the ladder until you've fallen off a couple of rungs to understand how important the ladder is. Make mistakes. Tell me you've made mistakes. I think that's a good thing. Because I'm human and I can connect with human. I can't connect with things that are better than human, with machines and things. I can connect with human beings. I don't like to, but I can. And the only other subject I want to bring up about this whole presidential thing, and, you know, when you do a radio talk show, you have to, you know, you're supposed to stimulate. I like to stimulate sexually. I think that's more fun. I get something out of it when that happens. This political talk, stimulation-wise, it's not happening. It's not happening. Donald Trump has got to release his taxes. He's got to release them. How can anybody vote for somebody running for president, the most prestigious and important office in this land, and possibly in the world, and yet you refuse to release your tax filings? Every other candidate running for president does. It should be mandatory. Trump won't do it. He refuses to do it. He says he's being audited. Rich people are audited continually. That's what happens. That's how it's done, and they should be. There's a lot of complicated stuff to his tax returns, I assume, if he makes the kind of money he says he makes. The IRS has repeatedly said, and people don't talk about this, the IRS has repeatedly said there's no reason why Donald Trump can't release his tax information. Even if he's being audited, it has nothing to do with releasing it. it is fine to release your tax documents while you're being audited. It's just fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Show what you filed. Show your taxes from the past as well and what the results of it were. He won't do that. He's running for president and he won't do it. And the immediate reaction to a human being when someone won't do something that they can otherwise do, they can, you become suspicious. And one might say that there is a high percentage that there are some incredible tax fraud situations going on with Donald Trump. I don't know that there are. He's creating an atmosphere where it's probable. And again, I've said this so many times, so many times. No matter who you're voting for or not voting for, don't do things stupid. If you love Trump, continue to love. But please get the background information off this guy. I know when you love somebody, love is blind, isn't it? Love is so blind. People get abused by their spouses. They get smacked and hit and domestically beaten. And they come back for more every time. Why? Why don't you leave him? He's beating the crap out of you. But I love him. I love him. I can't leave him. I love him. And of course, it's always a him. It's that mentality that some people are falling into with this Trump thing, where Trump himself even knows that influence that he has on people he thinks he knows. That famous comment, "I could stand in the middle of Manhattan in broad daylight and shoot somebody and not lose one supporter." That scared the bejesus out of me because it's true. Because it's true. If anybody, even if I knew them, stood somewhere and just shot somebody, I would be a little concerned about it and may not support them blindly at that point. But Trump actually believes it, he can do anything and not lose one supporter. And he's right. And that scares me. It doesn't scare me about Trump. Well, it does. But it more scares me about the people that support him blindly. And I know what you're saying. Well, I support Trump, but not blindly like that. Think about it. You may. If you defend everything he says and does, no matter what he says and does, and what he says and does are some pretty incredible, stupid things, and you know it, but he never apologizes, is never wrong, he could shoot somebody and knows you're going to be there anyway because you blindly love him, that's an arrogance that doesn't even appear in the dictionary. Just be careful, okay? Just be careful. Don't fuck up this whole country because of your inner anger about something. There's other ways to project your anger other than being stupid. Thank you so much for your intelligence. We move on at this time.
Here's what the internet is good for. Porn. 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 Really weird porn. Porn. Funny cat videos. Porn. And the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting. You know, when you need a little break from all those funny cat videos. Those things can really do a number on your wrist.
I got the wrist to show it. It's an election of not who you are, but who you're not. It's not what you are, it's what you're not. I'm not voting for you because you're trustworthy. I'm not voting for you because you're not trustworthy. Sounds confusing, but it's true. It's screwing me up too, man. It's screwing me up too. There are double negatives going on all over the place. It's just a big pile of mess. Somebody please say they're sorry. Somebody please say I make mistakes. Please, somebody. Thank you, Obama, for saying it, but you're leaving, so that doesn't matter now. Please somebody say I'm sorry. I'll say it. I'm sorry. I've done some shows that were horrible. And I don't even know if you listen to the whole show, but some of the shows are horrible. Some of the shows are fantastic. Some of them are horrible. And for the horrible ones, I apologize. I'm sorry. But from those horrible shows, I learned. And the succeeding shows were not as horrible. Once in a while, some of them were even good. I'm sorry if I hurt you in any way. Hey, this is the Ron Van Dam Show. I do this every single weekday. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. What's wrong with you? I know what's wrong with me. I'm sorry. I do this every single weekday, and I ask you to join me at that time. It is like a cult, but it's harmless. This one's harmless, though. You can go to my Facebook page, New England Broadcasting, the Ron Van Dam Show. The New England Broadcasting, the Ron Van Dam Show, and like the page. I don't understand that either, but do it. And also, you can contact me by the email system of America LLC by going to ronvandamshow@gmail.com. ronvandamshow@gmail.com. I'll be happy to do the email thing with you. Actually, I won't be happy about it, but I have to do it. How you doing, by the way? How you feel? I'm sorry I'm rude. How are you? How you doing, man? You looking good, though. What, did you lose weight? Yeah. That's how I compliment people. I tell you, I do it all the time. Hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. What, did you lose weight? Oh, Ron, I love you. I know. All it takes is a little compliment to make somebody feel good. Go out of your way. Say it to everybody. Ooh, look, did you lose a little weight? Do it to everybody. When I go to the supermarket and I buy an apple and I go out to the checkout register there and a lady says, that'll be $1.27. I go, oh, okay, here's $1.27. By the way, you're looking wonderful. Did you lose weight? It just works everywhere. And females, if you're a male, a female will always have sex with you on the spot if you say that to them. Immediately, they'll have it. Immediately, they'll be with you. It's a pickup line that works every single time. And it works on men, too. You tell a man that it looks like he's lost weight, he will be your love slave forever. Forever. Your sugar daddy, whatever you call that thing. We're going to speak to a very interesting man. He's written a book called Killing the Market, and it's not about buying apples at the supermarket. No, it's about the stock market. Everybody says, all the experts pretty much say, stay clear of the stock market, and yet the stock market is at its highest levels. The highest levels. And to think that just, you know, like, what, about 8 years ago? 7 years ago? The economy practically tanked. Now it's the highest it's ever been in the history of the stock market. Does that make it attractive? Sometimes not, because things are volatile these days. They're volatile. The market is volatile. So we're going to talk about that today. This is really fascinating, and it is a fascinating book, and I actually read it. And believe me, I don't read a lot of books because I don't have time. I don't have time to learn things. That should be Trump's motto. make America great again? No. The motto should be, I don't have time to learn things. That should be his motto. Anyway, I'm sorry I got back on that again. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm sorry. I've made a mistake. Robert McPhee joins us now. He is an author, has written the book Killing the Market. It's a book about legendary investor Robert W. Wilson. Now, a lot of us don't understand the market as it is, much less have heard of a gentleman named Robert W. Wilson. Why did you pick him to be the subject of this book?
I've been saying lately, this is the greatest investor no one seems to have heard about. I argue in my book that he's the greatest of all time because his percentage return on capital is unmatched or untouched, even by Warren Buffett or George Soros, people like that, who are a lot more famous.
Mm-hmm. And how old is this gentleman at this time?
Bob Wilson was born in 26, and very sadly, he had a couple strokes in 13 and jumped out of a 16th floor window.
Oh, my God.
Very dramatic, very decisive man in all of his, everything he did.
He
was 87 then.
Oh, okay. Well, you say jumped out of a window or fell out of a window?
No, jumped. It was all deliberate. And he apparently planned it for quite a while, and he didn't want to get into a compromised physical state.
Wow.
He said if that happened to him, he was going to go.
There are other ways to do that, huh? Oh, I don't know. Okay.
Well, and he went out the back side of the building so he wouldn't harm anyone or hit anyone.
Yeah, I know.
Really quite amazing.
So, it's quite a feat. And I assume that what he did and how he achieved was all above board.
Because
obviously there's a connotation of successful people in the market use tactics that are not exactly wonderful, but there are those that are that intelligent, that are that smart, I guess.
Bob Wilson was just a stock market player,
mm-hmm.
and what he did that amazed me is what a lot of people try to do and can't do, and that is to build and then keep a great fortune. He started with $15,000 and ended up after taxes with $800 million.
Wow,
it's really astonishing.
Is it? I mean, I don't know what the market was like during the prime of his investing lifetime. Can that still be achieved in today's volatile market, or was it during a time where you truly could make your fortune in that manner?
That's a great question, and Robert Wilson actually spoke to it a lot. He said money's a lot harder to make now than it was, say, in the 60s. He just adored the 60s.
Yeah.
Where, growth stocks weren't really even in focus back then. He basically founded the hedge fund industry by being a short seller as well as a buyer. But he often said there are times that are tougher, and there's so much more competition now in the markets.
It is different. The regulations, I assume, are different as well.
Right. Yes. Also true.
Yeah. You quote in the book, Mr. Wilson is saying, investing is like running a meth lab. It's very lucrative, but can blow up in your face. That sounds very, very accurate.
You know what Bob did? He said, I have no interest. He was a very impatient man who wanted to make money fast. And he said, I'm no more going to buy IBM or, General Electric than fly to the moon. I want something that's going to move. And if I get scalded once in a while, that's okay. I have to have action. He said he didn't want to be involved in any stock that couldn't break 50% or double in no time. And that he just had this wild portfolio, and he protected himself by buying 200 positions. He was always heavily diversified.
What do you think was the magic of his intuitive knowledge? Was it through research or what?
He worked and worked and worked. He was the most machine-like person I've ever encountered. I mean, I did happen to know him, but even historically, I can't think of many people who are so single-minded. But at the essence of Wilson's career is a genius for stock picking that I don't think anyone can understand. I don't think he really understood it.
Wow.
He was just so naturally good at selection. He just understood business.
Wow. Do you think that his own success at a point may have consumed him?
Oh, no. He had a wonderful saying. He was a very fun guy to be around, full of humor. He said something great. He said, "This business doesn't get to me, not fundamentally."
Really? Wow. That's amazing.
That was a great remark.
Yeah. Wow. Do you dabble in the market yourself?
Yes, I'm quite active. I'm in the futures markets as well.
So you're a big dabbler.
But yeah, I do quite a bit of this myself, but not on his level, of course.
Certainly, but dabbling, I guess, was not accurate in that sense.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Do you have any advice for the public based on what Bob theoretically passed on to you or through your dealings for the general public that may feel fear through the stock market at this point and not want to get involved really at all because of its volatility?
I think, I don't know. I don't want to, I'm pretty sure what Bob would say. Of course, I don't know. But,
sure.
You know, in 1981, nobody would touch the stock market because interest rates were, you know, above 15%.
True.
Now we have interest rates at half of 1%, and everybody is supposed to own stocks, and I think it's madness. I think the whole thing is inverted, you know, and this market is very rich. Why not just step aside, and if it goes up, it goes up without you. I mean, that's my view.
Oh, so you're saying, all right, so based on what Bob would do, you would say, or what Jesus would do, I guess, he would say, yeah, be cautious.
Well, Bob was very sophisticated. He would be short, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of stock here.
Right.
And he would own hundreds of millions. And he never saw the market, the broad market, as a threat because he was a real hedger.
Yeah. See, isn't it true that the more that you have to play with, that the better, then you can play? For example, As I think you accurately said, you have to expect that there will be losses. The idea is to outgain your positives against your negatives, but your negatives are always going to be there. So in order to endure the negatives, you have to be pretty well set.
You know, there's a fabulous saying, Ron, from golf. You know, the greatest putters are the guys who aren't afraid to miss.
Uh-huh.
And if you're investing money you can't afford to lose, you're not going to perform well. You're just going to be,
right,
you know, you're going to be gripped by anxiety.
Right. So that
so
is
you need the bigger the stake, the better. I would say that's certainly right.
Yeah. So in other words, don't play in the big leagues unless you can afford to do it.
Well, you know, Bob had $15,000. It took him 6 years to become a millionaire, which is a pretty fast pace.
Yeah.
And by the early 70s, he was at $25 million. But, you know, even he took a lot of time to build what he had.
Was there a time where he actually was taking losses, or was it always was the graph always going upward?
No, he got clobbered very badly. It's a famous story. He went short Resorts International and lost a third of his money in 1 year.
Oh.
Went from $42 million to $28 million. And everybody in New York, he was overseas traveling, and everyone in New York is devastated, and Bob grins and says, oh, it's just a third.
Yeah, right.
I've slipped on a banana peel, and he was right.
That's the point. Was that like in the 1990s, or when did
1978.
That happen? Oh, all the way back then.
He was short a quarter of a million shares, and it exploded in that gambling frenzy.
I see.
And he dropped, I think, $24 million.
Wow!
Which is not a lot of money for him now, but it was a lot then.
Wow!
Well, it's a very famous story.
Yeah, it sounds. It's called Killing the Market, and it's about Robert W. Wilson. And I guess if you're not even if you are in the market, you'll find it fascinating. But even if you're not, this is the story of. It's almost like you made this a fictional story into something that was interesting, but it really happened. It was about a real person. But it's almost like, it almost reads like a novel in a way.
Yes. I was very concerned, you know, but I'm a great believer in examples, and I think a lot of people can take a lot from this career story. I do think it's ultimately mysterious.
Yeah.
I call him Michelangelo at one point, and I really mean it. I mean, he's on that level. But I still think there's a lot to learn from his story.
Yeah. And it goes beyond the market. I mean, it happened to be the game that he was in, but I guess it's a story about trailblazing and the success that you can do if you carve your own path and master it.
He became a great philanthropist, and he was very investment-like about that. And he gave away $700 million.
Wow.
And then he called it quits.
Yeah.
It's an incredible story.
Wow. Killing the Market, available everywhere?
Yes, we have it has its own website, and it's up on Amazon and Kindle, and it's a fairly inexpensive paperback, about a 32,000-word book.
Yeah, and what is the website?
KillingTheMarket.com.
Well, that's kind of easy. It's the title of the book.com. How'd you get that?
Right.
Okay. How do we follow your career and your writings? Is there a website for you?
No, I have an author page up on Amazon.
Ah, come on. Let's get with this thing.
I know.
By the way,
I went to, I know and love Boston. I actually went to Andover.
Yeah.
Up north of the city, and right. I really love that area of the country. I miss it.
It is nice. Are you from the area?
No, Washington, D.C.
Oh, northeast. Close enough.
My father sent me to boarding school. I really don't know why.
Okay. What are you going to do? That's your next book, right?
Unlikely.
The unlikely. Okay. Hey, pleasure speaking to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the future.
I really like your show a lot.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. See me?
See me.
Can you hear me?
Feel me.
Can you touch me?
Touch me.
Feel me?
Feel me.
You see me?
See me.
Feel me?
Feel me.
Now touch me.
Touch me.
Okay, that's enough.
Feel me.
You want to do the see me again?
See me.
Oh, feel me. All right, go on, touch me.
Touch me.
All right, heal me, that's enough.
Heal me.
Okay, let's move on then, okay?
See
now,
me.
Again with the see me thing? Come on, man.
Heal me.
I know, touch me.
Touch me.
Oh, God. Heal me.
Heal me.
Figure that out.
You, I get the heat following you. I climb the mountain, I get excitement at your feet. Right behind you, I see the millions on you. I see the glory from you. Get opinions from you. I get the story.
From me, you get opinions, you get the story. See? Listen to me.
I get the music.
That's listening to me, you get that. What do you get?
I get the heat.
The heat, you get it.
Following you.
Follow me on Facebook.
I climb the mountain.
Well, follow me.
I get excitement at your feet.
Yeah. Again, is there more? Are you going to repeat it?
Right behind
there we go.
You, I see the millions.
Look at all of them.
On you, I see the glory.
Well, look, I'm out of time. Feel me, touch me, heal me, call me, text me. Have yourselves a wonderful day. Tomorrow, Tori Lagarde joins me for conversation. Until then, I wish you peace, ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Listening to you, I get the music, gazing at you.